Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of the Calling It Podcast, Trade Deadline Edition, MLB Trade Deadline. I'm Alex Barth. He's Alex Leibowitz. We are powered by CLNS Media, recording this one Wednesday, July 31st at about 5 o'clock, a little after the top of the hour. We wanted to give it that extra hour because, as I am still painfully aware of from my childhood in Omar Garcia Parra, 4 o'clock does not mean the deals are done. They still trickle out after that, but it looks like we're all done for now. Calling It Curse has been suspiciously quiet, though, Leibowitz.
It has been. It has been. We've had a lucky streak right now, but that's probably going to end today.
That was just me. That was me knocking on wood right there.
Yes.
We'll start with the Red Sox, and then we'll get into some of what happened nationally. And we'll actually start with a Calling It poll we put out on Twitter. You can follow us on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. I actually had the wherewithal to put a poll out before an episode for once. I always mean to do this. I finally got it one time. And the question was, what annoys you more? And the options were the Red Sox didn't buy or the Red Sox didn't sell. And 75% of people were annoyed the Red Sox didn't buy. You had smart asses in the comments like, I'm mad they didn't get a closer in the offseason, which is fair, but we're using the two. 75 to 25, though, I thought more people would be mad they didn't buy. I think they should have sold, but I knew I was in the minority on that. So I'm a little surprised. Red Sox Nation, a little more self-aware than I thought.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is the roster is still very good, and I think most logical, level-headed fans, even if they hate the Red Sox, can acknowledge that. If you ask most people, so you think they should have sold? I think you've been down on the Red Sox all season long.
Red Sox team. Yeah, I just thought you meant in general.
Yes.
Okay, that's right. Yeah, I have been down on the Red Sox team this year. That is more than fair.
Like, you've been calling for Dave Dombrowski to be fired. And so you have your view, you have your take, and you back it up in a very, you know, efficient and rational manner.
Thank you, sir.
But I still think they're a good team. They're a really good team. And the glaring hole is that pitching staff. They add Andrew Cashner a few weeks back. All they really need is one or two bullpen pieces, and they will get into the playoffs. And then once you're in the playoffs, obviously anything goes.
Starter. Like, realistically, cost aside, what did they need to do today to make themselves a World Series contender? For me, that was three arms. They needed to add a starter. They needed to add a reliever, and then somebody who can go in between one or the other. And then either you add a reliever, you kick Eovaldi back to the rotation, or you add another starter. Was this team within saving? Sure, but I think what they would have had to do to make the moves to make this team a viable World Series candidate was not worth the risk reward, especially when you went out and you saw what the Astros did today. And we'll get to that in a second, but I just want to say I'll give Dave Dombrowski credit. He did the right thing today. I know people get annoyed when we compare everybody to the Patriots because it's an unfair comparison, but the Patriots always value the 5-year outlook over the 1-year outlook. What's the best move for the next 5 years of this team versus the next one, right? And that's why that's a huge part of the reason they've been so dominant for so long. I think the Red Sox did that today. I think Dave Dombrowski did that today. They could have made a move. Certainly, it would have been easy to make a move if you're going to trade Cassis or if you're going to trade Chavis or Dalbec. It would have been easy to make the move that improves this team in the 1-year outlook, the next 365 days. But what's better for the next 5 years? What's going to keep this team competitive long-term with the way the farm system is right now? It was just sitting and standing pat. You know, they could have sold too. That's another conversation, but I think they made the right move today. If you're not sure if this team's worth investing in, then hey, don't invest. But let me put a caveat on that. And I'm sure some people are saying, oh, Alex, you're complimenting Dave Dombrowski. You know, mark the date and time. Dave Dombrowski made 5 wrong decisions. 5 or 6, like a bunch of wrong decisions to end up with this being the right decision, right? That's like getting off a plane and telling your pilot he did a good job with the landing, even though he landed the plane in the wrong city. So again, Dave Dombrowski did a good job today, but it should not have come to this. Today should not have been about it. We shouldn't be talking, should the Red Sox have bought or sold? This is a team that just won a World Series and had almost no roster change outside of losing the closer and losing some of their bullpen arms. So, you know, I it's weird because I'm on Twitter now. I'm defending Dave Dombrowski, which I don't feel comfortable doing because he made one right decision after, you know, 2 years of questionable ones.
Well, this is where I'll start. He said this, and I think this was spot on. The reality is they haven't been consistent. So is it worth giving up those pieces, as you just mentioned, if you have a bunch of pieces, a bunch of guys already on your roster, and Porcello, Chris Sale, Nate Evaldi, who aren't performing well right now, and you don't know if they're ever going to get there? Because the reality is you can't have all three of those guys play like they have been and still win a World Series. They need to pick it up. And giving rid and parting ways with some of your top prospects is not worth it if you have to bank on so much going right. I think Dombrowski saw that, and I think that that was, you know, the correct call, especially from a guy who's not afraid to part ways with high-level prospects. But you made another good point there. He didn't get a closer in the offseason. That would have been the best time to try to make that move and get that guy, but he didn't. And now he has to fight and during the trade deadline with a lot of teams that have a much better farm system that can give away a lot more, and it wouldn't cost them, you know, a major league spot or two. He didn't have that luxury, and that's definitely on him. But it is out of character, and I think it did take some self-control for a guy like Dombrowski not to buy in completely and give away the farm. That said, hey, Jackie Bradley Jr., I would not have shed a tear if he was traded away for an Edwin Diaz, him and another prospect. Maybe it was doable. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. But there are certain guys on this roster who I think were expendable. And you know, I do question, you know, how hard he really tried to maybe put those guys on the table.
And I mean, let's add to that too, that I actually just lost my train of thought. So let's just move on to some of the other moves. Specifically, we got to talk about the Astros and what they just did. Here's the top four in their rotation: Justin Verlander, Garrett Cole, Zach Greinke, Wade Miley. I don't know why I read the top four. I don't know that Wade Miley fits with the rest of that group. But like, Wade Miley's actually a pretty good four. Like, that team's outstanding. And remember, the Yankees are in the same boat as the Red Sox. They didn't make any moves. So you had the Rays and the Astros make moves. I know the Yankees are ahead of the Rays right now, but the Rays are playing some good baseball. The Yankees have struggled. The Rays go out, they get some help. The Astros get a major help. I feel like the Red Sox already kind of were pushed to the back burner, but even the Yankees now with this slide they're on and then not improving their team, you know, you're looking at the Astros again and then the Rays possibly being a major player in this.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, Wade Miley would be the best pitcher on the Red Sox right now.
Fair. This is true.
If you look at his ERA, 9-4, 3.06 ERA, he's been phenomenal this season. It's too bad they parted ways. He's a real ace.
Who else did the Astros add again? I'm trying to find the full list. I know they got a couple other names too.
The Astros, they got Greinke. I'm looking right now. They got Martin Maldonado. From the Cubs, who's not a huge addition, but it adds some depth. So that's really, Greinke's the number one guy.
Right. And they added three or four names though, and that's a major deadline. That's a team that knows they were underperforming, and the difference between the Astros and feels like they're underperforming, and that's kind of, just to get back to Dombrowski real quick, the Red Sox could have been in a position to buy if he didn't raid the farm system the last 2 years. But they couldn't sell because they have nothing to sell. So
yeah, but they won a World Series last year. So
that's fair.
I mean, it was worth it. It was absolutely worth it. And I think that also, you know, that will diminish your urgency if you're coming off a World Series championship season. The Astros, they've just done a better job with constructing that roster.
Right.
Objectively speaking, that's a fact. The fact that again, they have all those guys and they can still go out and get a guy like Zach Greinke is huge. So I think the key here is you need to start building a farm system back up, which I think the Red Sox are on their way of doing. The farm system's better this year than it was last year.
They had a very good draft this year, too.
So you have a lot of guys who will be coming up through that system. It's a good thing to keep them. And the main point here is you need a lot to go right for this team to win a World Series. And it's just, you can't count on four or five guys who have been underperforming at a ridiculous rate this season to just all of a sudden, you know, find what they had lost. It's just the odds of that happening are slim, and it's not worth giving up, you know, Michael Chavis or someone along those lines.
You said it to me last time we recorded. I don't remember if it was on the air or not, but it was a good point. Baseball's not a flip the switch sport. Like we talked about with the Celtics, and, you know, the odds of them flipping the switch were, I think, lower than people expected. But basketball is a sport where you can just kind of decide, okay, I'm ready, and go out and dominate. you can't do that in baseball. There is no switch to be flipped with David Price or Chris Sale or any of them like that. That's not going to happen. Back to the national stuff real quick, though. Are you like, I'm surprised the Yankees didn't add, because they had the pieces to go out and add, and they're always adding. They're the Yankees. They're the freaking Yankees. That one really surprised me more than anything else today, that the Yankees did nothing.
Yeah, and I wonder what they had offered for Zach Greinke.
Do we know if they did offer?
Well, I'd be surprised if the Diamondbacks didn't look into it. Trying to get rid of a guy and get, you know, rebuild your farm system, you're going to reach out and make it known that this guy's on the market, especially when it's a name like Zach Greinke and you have a really competitive American League and National League for that matter. So the two guys that the Yankees probably could have got were Zach Greinke and Madison Bumgarner. I'm assuming that the price for Bumgarner was too high. He wasn't dealt at all. They had no shot at getting someone like Noah Syndergaard, and I doubt that Stroman was going to be dealt in division. So I just think it was a bad draw for the Yankees. I don't think the guy was there at the right price, and I don't think they could have competed with the Diamondbacks for what they got from the Astros. So they obviously made the effort, and I still do think the Yankees are a promising team, and they have as good of a shot as anyone, but really besides the Astros. The story here is just the top team in the American League has been solidified, and they're going to be looking down. They already have the top record in the league, and that's the Astros. So I'm sure they made the effort. The guy just wasn't there, and you know, Brian Cashman wasn't going to force it.
All right, let's go to the NL real quick, because there's one move we have to talk about. We absolutely have to talk about. The Brewers, they got the MVP probably in Christian Yelich, but they kind of had a slow summer. They had a slow July. They're starting to fall behind a little bit, so they decided to go out and trade for the man, the myth, the legend, the great hope, Drew Pomeranz. And not only – here's how sweet it is – for those of us who like to critique Dombrowski's past moves, and just those of us who love karma or coincidence or irony or whatever you want to call it, not only do the Brewers go out and trade for Drew Pomeranz, they send to the Giants, which I think is an overpayment. Anything's an overpayment for Pomeranz, but I think it's an overpayment. Mauricio Dubon, and if that name sounds familiar, Red Sox fans, he was the one who went to Milwaukee along with Travis Shaw for Tyler Thornburg. So you have Pomeranz and a name associated with the Tyler Thornburg trade going back and forth for each other, which, and meanwhile, Travis Shaw is in the minors. So everybody lost that trade. As bad as the Red Sox lost it, I mean, Shaw had a good year last year for the Brewers, but it's not going great for them either. But I did not realize Drew Pomeranz was a wanted commodity in the MLB anymore. I honestly did not know that. I was shocked to see his name come up. Like, I'm like, there's no salary cap dumps in baseball. What's the team doing trading for the guy, especially contender? And I know the Brewers have some issues with starting pitching, and that's fine. But Drew Pomeranz? I didn't want to ever have to say that name again.
Yeah, it's definitely surprising. He had one good half season. And then he did all right with the Red Sox for a little bit. He's just inconsistent. He strikes me as just like a soft guy, mentally speaking.
I got the opposite from him. He always seemed to pitch with passion. He always seemed to be a guy who cared. I just think he's not very good. I mean, this year, just real quick here, 21 games, 17 of them starts. He has thrown 77 innings. He's 2-9 with a 5.68 ERA.
He's given up 17 home runs as well. Only, you know, in that few innings, that's not very good at all.
I mean, talk about being desperate. And again, this is the reason Dubon's a guy who's, you know, he's not an elite prospect, but he's a guy who's going to be a major league shortstop. And, you know, at the worst, he ends up being a major league utility player, a good guy to have on your bench. And that's what Drew Pomeranz costs. So that makes me kind of glad. Again, the Red Sox sat out today, but I thought we were done with Drew Pomeranz, Lebowitz. What did I do to deserve this?
I hope we're never done with him. I love Drew Pomeranz.
That was, any other surprising moves for you? Anything else that stood out for you that we didn't mention?
Not really.
Your guys not being traded?
I mean, yeah, let's
backtrack to this, actually, because I know you saw this. I think I saw you tweet about it this morning. How about that Reds-Pirates brawl last night?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. That was incredible. We need more of it.
I need that. I've never seen it. I've heard of charging the mound. I've even heard of charging the plate. Like, if a batter's acting too much like a diva, the pitcher will run up on him. I have never in my life, and I've seen a lot of baseball in my 25 years. I almost just forgot how old I am. I have never in my life seen somebody charge the dugout. That was spectacular. spectacular.
Well, it's
go ahead. No, go ahead.
I mean, you have usually it's batter going at one guy, the pitcher, and that's a lot less intimidating unless that pitcher's Nolan Ryan. This was literally someone going at an entire team. Forget about baseball brawls. Have you ever seen anything like that in sports? Like someone just run at an entire sideline or bench and just start going crazy fist on everybody?
Not in a long time. If you broke it down to somebody actually did a good job on Twitter this morning. I can't remember the name of the account, but look it up. They deserve the credit for this. They went through all the replays and broke down like the individual fights within the fight. And that was really fun to watch because there was a manager fight. Clint Hurdle and is it Bud Black in Cincinnati?
It's something like that.
We had two like old men fighting on the field. Clint Hurdle was pissed. Clint Hurdle and the Reds manager, meanwhile, he had been ejected already. He came back out. And then the funny thing to me was Yasiel Puig had been traded before that happened. Normally they pull guys off the field when that happens, because if somebody gets hurt, you know, it could damage the trade. Puig's probably going to be suspended. He lost his mind at the end of that more than anybody else. So if you're the Indians now, are you going back to the Reds and saying, we're not giving you all we said we'd give you? We're not getting this guy for as many games as we thought. Like, how do you not pull Puig out of that game once you trade him?
I think you know exactly where you're getting when you trade for Yasiel Puig.
You hope you at least get him for a game before he gets suspended.
Well, yeah, it'll be a 5-game suspension maybe, and he'll probably appeal it, and then it'll be pushed down to like 2 or 3. That's not the end of the world. I just think that the whole situation was incredible. Another quick note on that guy, Amir Garrett was his name. He was a basketball player at St. John's in New York.
Yeah, the pitcher for the Reds. Yeah.
Yes.
Big dude.
Big guy, 6'6". Obviously an athlete. If you're going to pick who's going to win in a fight, a basketball player or a baseball player, he's a basketball player every single time. And
did you see him walking off the field flexing, yelling back, "I'm like that. I'm like that." That was awesome.
My only issue is, like, whenever these brawls happen, you get guys who, like, throw punches. It happens every time. But I've never seen, like, a good punch. You know, the only punch I saw that was who's the guy in the Rangers who punched Jose Bautista?
Oh, Rúnel Odor landed one. I remember. Joe Kelly landed one on Austin last year.
Sort of, but it wasn't a clean hit. It wasn't.
It's true. But these guys aren't boxers. They're baseball players. You got to remember that.
That's true. But, I mean, hockey players can get it done. Ron Artest beat the crap out of a few fans. So he got it done.
You know what it is they tackle them first, and then they throw the punches on the ground. And I think that's to try to get it out of the view of the cameras to avoid suspension. Like, it all happens on the ground. You watch those fights. Watch the guys who are at the bottom of the pile. They're throwing punches and landing punches down there.
That's true. And there's a lot of pinching. It's like football. You know, you never want to be at the bottom of one of those piles.
I never get fighting in football. It's like fighting a clam. Like, yeah, where are you hitting? What are you trying to accomplish?
Punching a turtle shell. It's like, right, it's going, like, to hurt you more than him.
Hand. It's one thing if the guy's not wearing his helmet, whatever, but the guys are always, and that's why you see guys rip other people's helmets off. And that's why that's such a huge penalty. But I've never understood fights in football. Unless you're going to be Jalen Ramsey and choke slam the guy from behind, you're not going to accomplish anything.
Yeah. All right. Or Andre Johnson. Remember Andre Johnson versus who was that?
Finnegan. He got Portland the helmet off, didn't he?
He did. And then he beat the crap out of him. Finnegan was clapping for some reason. That was incredible. There's some good ones in the NFL. It's just you got to start stripping the guy down before you start, you know, pummeling him.
All right. Speaking of
football.
Speaking of football, let's get to our final thoughts. I will start with training camp just real quick. It's a couple of observations I've had. I'll go three up, three down. I'll just do this real crisp and clean. Three up, three down. Jonathan Jones might be the best player in camp. He wasn't necessarily going to make the roster on the last year of his deal, do $3 million. He would have been a depth casualty for sure, but he's been really good. Duke Dawson's barely seen the field. I love what I've seen from Jonathan Jones. Another up for me would be Braxton Berrios. I know he had a rough day today, but overall, he's looked really good. He was doing some sort of different workout program last year because he's got another level of explosiveness right now. I really like what I've seen from him. And then third one for me would be Michael Bennett. He's a guy, there are certain players, especially in football, they exist in all sports, but in football specifically, you watch them on TV or you watch their highlights on YouTube and you understand that they're good, but you have to really see it in person to appreciate what it is they're doing. And Michael Bennett's one of those guys. When you see him in person and you see how fast his hands move and how well he keeps his hands and his feet in sync and all of that, He's a guy that really stands out. Three downs from Juwan Williams, not quite NFL ready yet, I don't think. Dontrell Inman, if you remember, I was high on him. He's barely seen the field. I don't know what's up with that, but I'm just kind of waiting for him to get cut here any day. I'm not sure what's going on with him. And Isaiah Wynn, not really a down that he's performing poorly, but the whole left tackle thing's pretty well known at this point. We actually covered it last night. You can find that on clnsmedia.com. If he's not going to be left tackle, they got to figure it out. It might be Dan Skipper, but he's got to get himself ready for 11-on-11s because this team's banking on him a lot. Any training camp thoughts for you, Lebowitz, before we get to your final thought?
Well, I haven't been down there. Just really what I know is just from your Twitter account and the reporting I've seen. I'm concerned about the offensive line, specifically tackle position. I know that guys have been dropping like flies, whether it's retirement or injury or whatnot. So I'm curious to see how Belichick's going to fill that void and who's going to be coming into camp. But I don't know. There's not much for me. I think the rookies or the guys who were rookies last year didn't play a lot. Those are the ones who kind of intrigue me the most because we just don't know much about them. We kind of know the deal with everyone else on this roster. We know they're going to come out and perform. But what are you mentioned Braxton Berrios. You mentioned Isaiah Wynn. You mentioned Juwan Williams. What are those guys going to do in camp and how are they going to contribute this season? I think that's what I'm looking for most out of this team.
All right, Lebowitz, what's your final thought?
Okay, LeBron James, charitable guy. I'm going to preface this because whenever you have a conversation about LeBron James, I don't know if you knew this, Alex. You can't criticize him at all. You can never criticize LeBron James because he's the greatest basketball player in the world.
Yep.
I think it's ridiculous how we give certain celebrities a pass because we think that people want to see them act like buffoons. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, it was one of his oldest son's game.
Yeah, Bronny, right?
Bronny.
Yeah, Bronny, yeah.
Well, he wants to name him something different so he doesn't have to feel the pressure to live up to his dad's legacy. So he named him, of course, LeBron James Jr. And he goes to all of his games. He participates in the not all of them, but he participates in the layup line. Which, you know, don't get me wrong, that's cool to see LeBron James doing that.
Yeah, I really don't have a problem with that part. I don't.
Just step aside, though. Just step aside.
Look, let your kid have a moment. If it's okay with the coach and the players are cool with it, like, I don't have a problem. Just as long as it's okay with the coach. Like, let the coach run the team.
Of course. I'm not saying it's illegal. I'm not saying, like, maybe the players like it. I just think it's a bad look. I think it's a bad look to be that guy. I've never seen any former athlete or current athlete do that to one of their kids, get involved to that extent. Especially someone who's the caliber of LeBron James.
That's not true. Did you see the documentary on Ray Lewis and his kid playing?
That's the guy to emulate.
High school football. I mean, I know that's kind of a toxic name at times, but no, I think as far as family's concerned, there aren't many black marks on Ray Lewis's record. I know he's other black marks, but there are other guys who have been involved, certainly. And celebrities too. I mean, there was the documentary on Snoop Dogg and his son. He was
He started a whole youth football league, and that was to help kids in impoverished.
No, the Snoop Dogg dad is a coach documentary. He was completely out of control.
Well, I think Snoop Dogg gets too much credit for, you know, I don't think Snoop Dogg's okay. A great guy.
We keep going on LeBron.
I don't like Snoop Dogg either. But LeBron James, I just think it's over the top. And there was one play. It was a nice pass, an alley-oop dunk. He ran on the court, literally like half quarterback. It was half a suicide, essentially. And it was just, he's screaming and he's making it about him. And it just annoys me. I think it's just a look at me move for a guy who doesn't need anyone to really look at him more than they already do. I think that if you're a parent, you should be on the sidelines. That goes for anyone from a former professional athlete to someone who doesn't have any athletic ability. And I saw a lot of people saying, you know, this about LeVar Ball. They're using the same logic with LeVar Ball that they used for LeBron James.
I wouldn't.
He's not. He's not. But they're using the same logic, which is like there's a lot of people who don't have dads. It's good that they're showing up and that they're supporting them. It's like, sure, yeah, I get that. That doesn't mean you can, you know, use your kid to act like a buffoon or make it about you. I think LeBron James, and I've always said this, he's a very arrogant guy who acts like he's the most humble person in the world. And this is just another example of him being that guy. And it just annoys me. It's the whole thing. LeBron James will always annoy me from a personality standpoint. Is he charitable? Yes. Is he probably a good father? Yeah. He seems like a really respectable, good guy who's led a great life. I'm allowed to be annoyed by him. And I think the fact that people constantly feel the need to stick up for him and defend him and you know, call people who think that he's kind of an egomaniac a jerk, I think that that's just over the top. I think it's ridiculous. And I think the criticism levied against him over this stuff is fair.
So I'll say this. I think I read this right. I believe I read this right. Neither of the kids involved in that play were his kid. So that
one of them was that though. I thought the kid who passed.
I don't think
either way.
I think
either
way kid wasn't in the game at that point. The thing for me with this, and this happens with Tom Brady too sometimes, and things Tom Brady does is, and honestly, I look at arguing about LeBron James sometimes like I look at arguing about politics. The people who feel one way or the other about LeBron James, they're going to feel that way. People aren't changing their mind at this point about LeBron James, sure, right? Yeah. We're, 16 years into his NBA career now? He's been in the spotlight for 18 years. If you like LeBron, this is a really cool dad moment. If you don't like LeBron, it's him mugging for the cameras again. And it's two halves of the same coin. It's glass half full, glass half empty. Depending on how you feel about LeBron, that affects how you're going to see this. So I'm not surprised to see it become an argument, but I just hate stuff like this. It was the same thing too with Brady and taking his daughter
Brady
or whatever.
Listen, Brady's not nearly as much of a look at me type of guy. He isn't someone who has this huge ego.
Some people would argue with the social media stuff in a different way, but some people would argue with the social media stuff he is.
The social media stuff, though, I don't think it's comparable.
He's very about – he might not be as outwardly showy as LeBron, but he is – has the same sort of, brand.
Well, I have no problem with LeBron James and the brand. Make as much money as you want.
My point is some people hate that from Brady. And, I wasn't surprised when the Brady Cliff thing became an issue, because if you hate Tom Brady and you see that, you're going to find a way to hate it. If you like Tom Brady and you see that, you're going to find a way to like it. I just think there are certain athletes in sports that just hit such a polarizing level that no matter what they do, we're going to feel a certain way about it. Certain celebrities in general, that they're going to do something, and this in politicians too. And I don't like to talk politics on this show. You can picture any politician you want, and this statement is true. There are certain actions that they take, and it's one reaction or the other. And depending on how you felt about them going in, like, they don't really change people's opinions. And it's a bigger indictment on society and the way we look at these things, that people don't find narratives that fit their belief. They like to fit their belief to the narrative. So if they believe that they like person X, mm-hmm. they're going to make sure that their beliefs line up with person X and fit person X's narrative, instead of, saying, oh, this person did something I don't like. I used to like them, but now I won't. Like, people don't really do that anymore in our culture. So, and I think this is just another example of that. Well,
so I'll say this. If this was the only thing LeBron James did, I would not be making a big deal of it. It's the whole enchilada. It's the fact that, it's a whole Taco Tuesday.
Annoying. That thing, love LeBron. That thing's so annoying.
It's just weird. I actually don't have a problem with that.
It's just too high pitched. It kills my ears.
I just think it's odd. I think he's a weird guy. But I have no problem with people being weird. That doesn't bother me at all. I think that's actually something that makes you more likable. But with him, it's the whole thing. He's had a lot of missteps in his career in regard to just how he's, used his platform. Not how he's used his platform, but, the decision, things he says to the media, and just, he's contradicts himself constantly. And I think one of the ways he does that is, again, by making himself out to be this guy who's like, I'm humble. And I just rather him be authentic, be like, no, I'm great. And he does that once in a while, but specifically with I don't want my kid to live in my shadow, but you name him LeBron James Jr. I want him to make his own career and do his own thing. And then you run in the court. It's just the whole thing. And I'm from Boston. So I had this bias that's ingrained in me from hating the Cavaliers and LeBron James growing up. And it's hard to shake that, but I look at certain things with him that Tom Brady hasn't done, since we're doing that comparison. They're just completely different people. One type bothers me more than the other. I think Brady's been more consistent in portraying what type of person he is in front of the camera and off.
I wouldn't say that I was comparing them as people. I was comparing the way people look at them.
Yeah, no, I get that.
Yeah. All right, so that'll do it for us this week. For this episode, we got a football game on Thursday, Levis. I don't know if you realize that. We have a bona fide football game coming up, right? Thursday? I get that right?
So, yeah, Thursday, is it the Hall of Fame game tomorrow?
Oh, the Hall of Fame game's tomorrow. I meant like Patriots football, August 8th, next Thursday. So, that is actually one of our better tweets in a while. I don't know if you saw that one I put up. Field Yates tweeting that between now and February.
The Tinder one?
Now and February, every week has at least one college or NFL game. So I tweet a screen cap of that tweet, and then with it, a screen cap of "Do you want to delete Tinder?" Because so, it's that time of year, baby. It's football time. Yep. We love it. We love it. So
football's my girlfriend.
Exactly. Exactly. Wake up next to football every day if I could. All right. So we'll talk football plenty next week or on the next episode. You can find that
Hard
on
Knocks.
What's up?
Hard Knocks Sunday.
Hard Knocks. That's true. Hard Knocks is back soon too. And John Gruden says he's in love with Nathan Peterman. So
I'm in love with John Gruden.
That's a teaser if you need it. Before we go down a Gruden hole, let me wrap this up. Find all our episodes on Twitter at Calling the Podcast. Check us out online, clnsmedia.com, under the podcast tab. For Alex Lovitz, I'm Alex Barr. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you on the next one.